Big show for you here today. Full deep dive on the upcoming year three wide receivers, a look back and a look forward at the 2024 NFL draft wide receiver class with the great Rich Rebar. I'm still optimistic about a lot of players from this class, but we're going to do a little bit of contrarian stuff here. We're going to talk about maybe how it doesn't work out for some of these guys, and yet also why I am willing to keep the candle lit on guys like Ladd McConkey, Rome Odunze, maybe even a little Brian Thomas Jr. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and I'm very excited about this show for multiple reasons. One, because it's going to deep dive into a topic that I'm very fond of discussing, even though it's kind of a pained conversation. It's very much like a July type of show. I do enjoy those vibes, but in particular, one reason I'm very, very excited is because the man joining me to talk a little ball is my good friend. You know him, you love him, Rich Rebar of Sharp Football. Rich, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, everyone? You know, post-holiday, we're here, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, hitting the ground running. It feels like the season now that we, like, the fourth is always kind of like the benchmark. I saw people tweeting, like, 10 Sundays to go to the season. Like, you start to see those tweets, like, the days, the player numbers.
Hate that. I hate that. I'm like, no. We still got a lot of time left, right? No.
Yeah, absolutely. But it does feel like training camps are on the cusp of training camps opening up. You're trying to get a little more clarity outside of these reports that, you know, people are tweeting out. And it just feels like we're really, really moving now headstrong towards the season.
No question. And I think one of the big kind of, I don't know, defining topics about this football season, Rich, will be, in a way, kind of the discussion point that you and I actually had about a year ago now on the show. I'm sure you don't remember. I only remember because producer Colin is smart. It reminds me of the things we've talked about on the show in the past. For me, once the show's over, it's gone. But you and I had a discussion in Contrarian Corner last year about, like, are our wide receiver rankings wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, what if we're just totally wrong about who the best wide receivers in the NFL are? Some of that actually, I think, ended up playing out pretty decently. Like, one guy I talked about on the show was Chris Olave. And, like, you guys don't realize that Chris Olave is just as good as any of these top receivers are. He ended up being a really good pick. But one of the things that we talked about in that class was some of these second year wide receivers and how that group of players really could shake up the ranking and how we thought about the wide receiver landscape. And 365 days or so later, I think it's fair to say that the output now that we've gotten from a statistical standpoint from the 2024 drafted wide receivers, which, if anybody's been listening to this show since then, or really just has been following the NFL since that period, knows that that was billed to be like an elite, top level wide receiver class. And through two seasons, there's some really troubling marks. We're going to go over a few of them here, but I think, honestly, the best way to kind of show it is that last year, the leader in terms of the 2024, the second year receivers in just total yards, which I know is not everybody's favorite way to judge players, nor should it be. It was Ladd McConkey, which, great. After his rookie season, I said, you know, you can make an argument that Ladd McConkey's film was better than any rookie wide receiver in the NFL in the year 2024. So cool. He leads the group in yards in the second season of these guys. It was with fewer than 800 in the regular season. So very disappointing second season, Rich, which I think is a good time to now, like, kind of just do a deep dive on this group and see what we can expect from them going forward.
What I also think is interesting about, you know, even just bringing that tweet up is something I think that's topical for a lot of gamers right now too, is those guys were guys that kind of came on strong the back half of their rookie year too. You know, outside of Marv, you know, I think Marv was still just getting a lot of Marv. And, you know, we have a lot of these guys this year in particular that, you know, are pushed up the draft board, or like gamers maybe are have like conundrum. They're not necessarily year two guys, but like we had like this massively strong finish from Parker Washington. Like how real is that? Well, maybe we'll touch on that with Brian Thomas. You know, obviously we had the Michael Wilson stuff, which I guess we'll also get to some of this stuff, I guess, by default, by proxy. You know, like guys like Alex Pierce, or, you know, Olave was one of those guys that after the trade of Rashid Shaheed and the insertion of Tyler Shuck into the lineup, had, that's where he did his best work too from the fantasy season as well. So it also is, like I said, like a word of wise of just saying, like, how do we factor in like these small samples inherently that are part of a small sample to begin with?
It's such a great point. I was just talking about this earlier today, actually, with James Coe, that I think we always, the royal we, always over indexes on the last thing that we saw and just expects that to go forever. Honestly, a guy like Luther Burden, who it's like, well, he finished the year so strong, like he's the wide receiver one in Chicago now. Again, that's another topic that we're going to talk about on today's show as well. We'll get into a lot of this stuff just overall because, yeah, it's just tangentially related to some of the players we're discussing today. But just again, before we dive into it, I want to level set this conversation. A big reason I wanted Rich to be the co-host for the show is because I think Rich is super smart and I actually respect his opinion. And because of that, I think it's important to have you here, Rich, because I will just admit before we get into this exercise that I am still really optimistic about this group as a whole. Like this class as a whole, I actually think can really get going here in 2026. So it's important for you to be here to push back on me when needed, because there's a handful of players here that I still really like and am very much clinging to optimism for. There's some guys that we'll talk about throughout the course of the show that it's probably not going to happen for. As a matter of fact, we were discussing this before we got going here, Rich, that there's some guys where it's not even a question that it's over for them, to the point that they're not even on the outline. Like just guys that were taken inside the top 100 picks who I don't even think we don't have on the outline here today. Jalen Polk. Polk we might touch on. Malachi Corley, Jermaine Burton, Roman Wilson. Luke McCaffrey was the 100th overall pick in this year's draft. He's not a player we're talking about today. So, again, just to level set here, I'm optimistic about some of these players, but there has been some real whiffs in this class so far.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that third to fourth round's looking pretty rough. That 1-2 turn, you know, that like pick, you know, from basically, you know, Xavier Worthy to where Jalen Polk went, that little cluster of guys will probably be talked about for a long time when the dust settles on this draft class. And I still think that there's some optimism for some of the guys in that group too as well, that maybe were snake bit. So we'll try to sort out through some of the stuff that we think is noise, and then also some of the guys that if you're in a dynasty league, you know, yeah, probably isn't going to happen.
Probably not going to happen. Weirdly enough, that transitions us perfectly to our first player to talk about here. We're going in ADP order, which, by the way, is also kind of instructive to our discussion here, that there are no players from this class going inside the top 15 wide receivers in consensus ADP right now. But it does bring us to our first name to discuss here, which is weird because this guy is going highest. And I think he's actually the only player that we would all kind of agree is on that superstar trajectory. And yet it's really tough to talk about him in an optimistic format. And that is Malik Nabers of the New York Giants here. ADP right now, 37th overall, wide receiver 16, and falling after a troubling offseason's worth of injury news here, Rich. What are your expectations on Nabers going to this year? And again, how are you viewing him right now with just the injury cloud hanging over him? Are you willing to take a chance on Nabers, or just where are you at with him?
Yeah, we're just waiting to see, to find more clarity as when camp opens. Like, what's the actual timetable? We've heard a lot of different things. And obviously, you know, he had the post, you know, surgery cleanup, which, you know, if you follow everyone now that is doing this great yeoman's work for us, that are they're better doctors than we are. You know, some are saying like this isn't a big concern. It's not. So like, let's see. Right. Like we're going to finally get clarity, because like I said, these guys are going to be taking the field and actually in training camp, and we'll be able to uncover some more of this stuff. He had a surgery on, his original surgery was on October 28th. So full timeline recovery, 10 months would be the start of the season. Like that's pretty much ballpark for like where we've been with like ACLs. You know, we'll see, you know, where he is in that timetable. The big thing is like where he starts the year. Is it on PUP or not, right? Because like if he starts the year on PUP and we're missing four games, and then there's a ramp up period after those four games, like you're asking, you know, a lot of gamers with an early pick, you know, at a round three, round four cost, which is what he's falling to now. If he's going to be available in week one and there's ramp up from week one and not starting in week five, that changes the trajectory a little bit too. But we've all played fantasy football a long time, and we all know injury optimism has been the death knell probably for the most of us than anything else, right? This is a good player. We want to believe in the talent, but there are also just a ton of moving parts here in terms of one, even in the small sample we had last year, which was with Russell Wilson, it was very volatile. Like he played three games with Russell Wilson, his wide receiver 29, wide receiver 2, wide receiver 87. They go to insert Jackson Dart. We're getting excited. He lasts 11 snaps in the Jackson Dart's first start before we see him. So we don't know how him and Jackson Dart mesh. They're not going to be practicing a lot this offseason, even if he's going to be, you know, up. And it's a whole new offense, right? And this is an offense that if you follow the tea leaves, the New York Giants are a huge drum telling you that they want to run the football this year. Like, they hire John Harbaugh, you hire Matt Nagy, you bring in Greg Roman as an assistant. Like, these are two coaches that have run a lot of 12, 13 personnel at all their stops, even with Nagy when he was with the Chiefs. You signed Patrick Ricard at the open of free agency, right? Like, you had an Isaiah Likely. Use a first-round pick on Francis Moyaga. Like, they want to run the football. So, like, how do all these things, like, marriage together? And I think when you look in that pocket of where Neighbors is settling right now, that's a real hot pocket of wide receivers. We're going to touch on a number of these guys as we move on. And that's kind of the strength of where I've been drafting wide receivers this year. If I don't get one of these top guys, and I would have it be like a four-man tier at the top, where it would be Puka, Chase, JSN, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, then I'm starting to look at like that wide receiver like 17 to 30 range. Like, I love a lot of the guys in that pocket. So I want to get my running backs and just start taking two to three of these guys. They all won't hit, but I want to really attack that pocket. So for me, I'm not as risk averse with all those things I laid out. And I'm probably going to say, like, all right, if I'm going to lose to Malik Neighbors, at least I have kind of a good reason to go down losing to him this year.
No, it's a great point. And I kind of share the similar sentiments just about him from a fantasy pick standpoint, that there's just so many good receivers in that range. I don't know why you would go down with the ship with Neighbors, because of some of the things you mentioned from an environmental standpoint as well, that might change what we saw in his rookie year when he was just targeted at this like outrageous rate. And a lot of it, honestly, it wasn't fluky production whatsoever, because I think Neighbors is a great, great player. But I mean, there was a little bit of scamminess to the way they just like got him the ball, and the offense kind of stunk. You know, that always matters to me. Even again, the film, which was fantastic, so it's really not that big of a deal. But nevertheless, like, the Giants kind of offense that year wasn't good while just pummeling him with targets. And I don't know that that's the way they want to operate going forward. Him in isolation, though, Rich, I just think it should be said, again, he is on that like super, super star trajectory. Like, true, could be a tier one receiver. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, their tier one is a very small group, but what he did last season before he got hurt, which I agree with you from a production standpoint, was volatile, and probably was going to be volatile anyways, because Jackson Dart is very similar to Russell Wilson and how he wants to play the game, and just the amount of like go routes they had him running from the outside. But again, truncated sample size, Neighbors turned in a 98th percentile success rate versus press coverage and reception perception in the small sample that we saw of him last year. Guys that have hit that while also playing fewer than 30% of their sampled snaps from the slot in reception perception history: AJ Brown, Davante Adams, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson has done it 3 times. Odell Beckham did it 3 times, and then Neighbors in that small sample. So he was looking like, again, just as an individual player, like, he was going to be one of those guys. But I think you bring up good points about just like the overall offensive environment, the amount of targets, and obviously what he's going to look like in isolation coming off of a serious injury.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, if anyone's like sitting there at the, you know, the 3-4 turn, and he's there, like the sirens call, the upside, I'm full aware upside wins championships as well. I understand it. I'm just a little more risk adverse in that area.
Totally fair. So again, I think we can kind of leave the
Neighbors
discussion.
I guess the question is, where would he have, if we're both on the same page, where would he have to fall for you to say, all right?
I mean, that's so hard to say, because it really does depend kind of on like the team that you've built around him. And that's obviously fair. it's really difficult to say. I would just say from an individual wide receiver rankings standpoint, like, he probably has to get into the mid 20s when we get into like the Jameson Williams range, I guess, where I'm like, all right, yeah, I think once you start to see those names come off the board, even players I like in that range, like a Luther Burden or a Mike Evans or Christian Watson to some degree, I think I'm willing to take a shot on Neighbors there. I just think that someone's always going to grab him before we get to that territory. And there are names that I like maybe ahead of consensus that go, you know, kind of in a similar spot that I would just rather take the shot there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that, like I said, that to me is the most, like last year I was building a lot of my draft strategy around like that similar pocket. And I feel very similarly this year when you look at guys that are going in that same range. When you're talking about Ladd, we'll talk about Zay Flowers, Igbuka, you know, Terry McLaurin, you brought up like guys like Burden, Waddle, and Christian Watson. Like, those are just all players that are better offensive environments. They offer like spike week potential of themselves, and they're not injured right now.
Right. Exactly. You let it off with this, and this is the Scott Pianowski, you know, kind of mantra to live by, is that injuries are going to find you during the fantasy football season. Yes. You don't have to go looking for them in your draft. But you mentioned Ladd McConkey. He's the next name on the list here. He goes off the board, wide receiver 19 right now, 44th overall ADP in consensus rankings. What's gone right? What's gone wrong for Ladd McConkey? And what are your 2026 expectations?
Yeah, this is a player I think just from a talent perspective, like I'm still like fully in on. I've not read a lot of the year two totally. Reception perception stuff, so I'll let you go over it. I'll good, get educated as the field gets educated. But I can definitely look back at the Chargers season. It's like very definitive what happened to them last year. I mean, their starting offensive line played 15% of their offensive snaps together last year. That's even accounting for Rashawn Slater, you know, opening the year not expected to play. And really the back half of the year after Joe Alt was finally kind of like done for is where this offense in totality, like it wasn't a Ladd McConkey thing. Like this is a systemic offensive failure. From week 10 on, the Chargers were 27th in yards per play. They were 27th in success rate on offense. They were 29th in gains of 10 or more yards, and they were 27th in points per drive. Like, this was an offense that nosedived completely around everyone. It wasn't just a one-player thing. And that found, you know, Ladd McConkey, obviously. I mean, after Joe Alt was hurt, he averaged 2.7 catches for 37 yards per game. The one thing that also hurt him from a top-down stance, even if the Alt injury doesn't happen and Slater's healthy and everything, was the addition of Keenan Allen. When you look at the targets on early downs, right? His second year was almost identical. His early down target share was 20.2%. As a rookie, it was 21.9%, dead on, right? But on third downs, Ladd McConkey, 18.4% target share. It was 25.4% as a rookie. Keenan Allen, 34%, second in the NFL behind Amon-Ra St. Brown. They brought in Justin Herbert's foxhole guy. Like Keenan Allen was is always like, if I'm in trouble, I'm his going binky. Here. Yeah, he's no longer on the roster. It frees up those. And then, you know, we have this big addition of Mike McDaniel. And when you look at Mike McDaniel, a offensive play caller that gets the ball to the best players in his offense, whether that be on a season level, a per game level, he gets the ball to his best guys. From a production stance, when you just isolate like the McDaniel side, the Shanahan tree, I mean, since his time in Miami, they led the league in plays in 1 to 2 wide receiver sets. They used motion on a league high 66% of dropbacks the past 4 years. They were number one in the NFL in rate of play action at 32.9%. Some of that's like RPO manipulated instead of just like, you know, under center dropback game, which we'll get some more of that with Justin Herbert, because Justin Herbert is the most talented quarterback that this system has probably had. I would argue since Aaron Rodgers and Mike LaFleur in 2020-21, you do have a Matt Ryan year in there too as well. But like even from an athletic stance, maybe going back to original Mike Shanahan and John Elway, like Justin Herbert is kind of like modern like John Elway. But McConkey as a rookie in 1 to 2 wide receiver sets, 3.4 yards per out run on plays at motion, 2.95, 4.3 yards on play action passes his first year. So like these are all things you can kind of go back to. If there's one pull down I have maybe for Ladd is like he's caught so much steam this offseason. I think he opened like around like the mid wide receiver 2 range, and now he's going like, he's like wide receiver 15, 16. Like he's starting to really get pushed. Is that even going back to college, like he's never been a guy that's like just dominated like a high end like share of targets. Like he's got four career games at the 30% target range. And the Chargers are a little deeper than the Miami teams were, or like the Miami McDaniel teams were more top heavy. But this is a player from a talent perspective and a scheme marriage fit that I think Pete Gamer should be like really excited about a potential year 3 bounce back here.
Yeah, I think the reasons to be optimistic about McConkey are pretty obvious, and all, and really the ones I share with you, in addition to the fact that I think he's just an awesome player. And I don't think, in other than maybe like some drops and, you know, just weird like chemistry moments and, you know, contested catch stuff, I don't really think him as an individual player, there was really any drop off. I think obviously it was offensive line and Keenan Allen being there, like that changed a lot of just the opportunities that he was going to get. And I'm very optimistic about McDaniel and the way this offense is going to go. I've expressed that a lot on the show. I do think your point about him not being a high volume receiver is important. And partly because, Rich, I think talent wise, he can absolutely handle it. Physically, and we probably haven't talked about this enough, can Ladd McConkey handle that? I mean, this is a guy that even in his dynamic rookie season was like scraping himself off the turf to like go to the sideline after getting smacked in the intermediate areas of the field. And he's awesome in those intermediate areas of the field, like especially going over the middle on dig routes and stuff like that, which should be like a critical part of this system with Mike McDaniel. Can he just survive 130, 140 targets on an annual basis for McConkey? That's the question. Because again, talent wise, I don't see any reason why he can't be a high volume player, can do all the things that this system would require. And I think that box has been checked. I think it really is just also like, how optimistic are you about Quentin Johnson, some of these other receivers? That's a key point in this as well. I think QJ has not gotten the credit he deserves for growing as a player. Like, people still talk about him as if he's the guy that he was as a rookie when he was one of the worst receivers I've ever charted. And he's made progress every individual season. And to the point that, Rich, I would say the guy that he could be this year is like Corey Davis in that 2020 season with the Tennessee Titans, when both him and AJ Brown were top five in yards per route run that year, because they were 31st and 11 personnel. They were playing a lot of, you know, two receiver sets and everything like that, which just funneled targets to those two guys. And Davis wasn't consistent, but he was making a lot of big plays, 10.7 yards per target that year. I could see QJ being that guy. And again, can he be that guy while Ladd is also like a top 15 receiver, set it and forget it in fantasy? I think that's at least a question worth asking.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Quentin Johnson too. You know, a lot of people brought up the yak stuff. This is a big physical player that can, he has the body type to, if you get him the ball in space, we haven't really seen a lot of that, you know, early in his NFL career, but there was some highlight plays, you know, going back to TCU, where he was just bigger and faster than the other humans chasing him. The wild card for here is the wide receiver depth. And if there's any type of rotation, and you bringing up like Ladd's, you know, physical profile, I think is something that gets overlooked as a potential, like maybe outlet where he doesn't have like that, you know, 85%, 90% route participation, because you have capable guys like a Trey Harris who can contribute in the run game. You have the addition of Brennan Thompson. The second they drafted Brennan Thompson, all I could think about is the year two throw when Justin Herbert had that throw to Jalen Guyton, where like he threw it just like 65 yards on like a rope. And it's like, he hasn't had a player this fast. And obviously I know this is a Mike McDaniel influence. Like, this is a bread and butter Mike McDaniel player, but like, does he get on the field at all in any types of situations to just like uncork some deep balls? And the tight end room here is pretty good. I mean, I'm very excited to see Charlie Kolar and maybe an expanded role. This was a guy that, going back to Iowa State, you know, in those Brock Purdy teams, was a lot better pass catcher than we've seen him utilized at this point in the NFL. They've got Aronde Gadsden, who flashed at moments as a rookie, and he's a guy you can have that be that flex out Y and use him as an extension, you know, as it's a wide receiver. And then you add just a veteran in David Njoku. So just like the marriage here, I think the depth is just a lot stronger than those Miami teams that were just extremely Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle driven, and Devin Achane, you know, obviously.
No, there's a lot of names here on this roster that you just kind of ran through. And it is funny, like, there's been some, you know, steam on Twitter lately for Keaton Mitchell. It's like, oh, Mike McDaniel wanted this guy so bad. We're kind of forgetting that Mike McDaniel really wanted Brennan Thompson. Like, I saw that draft call. He's like, get ready to run, baby. Get ready to run. Like, he is excited about these guys. Like, some of the kind of depth pieces, he's been talking up Quentin Johnson, saying his drive step is going to F up the league, you know? So, I mean, there's just a lot of optimism for a lot of players here in Los Angeles right now. So I think that's the thing with Ladd.
And that's why I've just been on Herbert. Like, my thought process has been like, just give me Herbert and I'll let the rest sort itself out. Hampton as well. But like, yeah, that's how I've been approaching it with the quarterback stuff. Cause you brought up Ladd, and like, you looked at pocket receiver, he's going like, he could be hyper efficient in this offense, like from a
Yes.
From a per target base. Like, absolutely. But he also, some of the guys he goes up against, like, it's easy to project those other guys for 40, some upwards of 50 more targets than you can probably project him for.
Yeah, no, it's such a good point. And that's why I think, to bring it all back around on Ladd, my tagline for him coming into this offseason was he was the most obvious bounce back candidate at wide receiver in the entire NFL. And I think it's so obvious now that there's a risk that we end up pushing him up too far. Right. You know what I'm saying here? And to come back to that, like, injury concern, just like the amount of volume that he can handle, my pre-draft comparison for Ladd McConkey, because I wanted it to not be like a pop gun white slot receiver, because that's not how he plays, was Tyler Lockett. And in my new player comparison tool on the site, Reception Perception, like, Tyler Lockett's seasons just pop up for Ladd McConkey as a comparison from a charting standpoint. And obviously, Tyler Lockett was awesome. Tyler Lockett was a great, great player, but he never quite was, like, you know, a consistent top 10 fantasy receiver, because that's just, like, not how he won. So I think that's just important. Like, kind of, I'm going to be really optimistic about McConkey. This, I already have been, and I'm going to continue to be, but I do want to be a little price sensitive on him. And it kind of sounds like you feel the same way, Rich.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is all Jackson Smith and Jigba's fault. Let's be real. Like,
I've said it. I've said he is the best case to be this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba. I've said that plenty of times. But yeah, you're right. It is all his fault.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson Smith and Jigba having that type of season that he had last year, because a lot of people will draw to, like, the 1-2 wide receiver, tight split stuff, hyper efficient player, and, like, how can we get this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba? That's going to be the thing, right? And, like, the two guys that are, like, the prominent names that always pop up are Ladd McConkey and then Zay Flowers. Like, the two guys that always pop up.
Yep. And again, I'm going to end up saying it a lot. So I think it's good that we had a little bit of a realistic conversation to kind of balance out some of the optimism that I do really have about this player. We're going to take our first quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about another player that I'm incredibly optimistic about and remain very optimistic about. And maybe Rich will give me some pushback. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and we are going over the 2024 wide receiver class, year three guys now, and how optimistic or pessimistic we should be about this group. And great, and certainly going to be an easy and short conversation here, brings us to Rome Odunze, ADP wide receiver, or excuse me, wide receiver 28, overall ADP is 63. Again, I was a big Rome Odunze fan as a prospect. I think he's been better than credited so far in the NFL, Rich. So I am kind of hoping you can give me some pushback here, because some of the reasons I've seen to be out on Rome Odunze so far, I think just, like, don't hold up to real scrutiny. But I'm curious where you're at with Odunze relative to just the entire Bears offensive optimism. And of course, some of the other really good young players that I like Luther Burden and Colson Loveland in this offense as well. Mm-hmm.
I just think, you know, with Odunze, you know, gamers and fantasy gamers in general, especially fantasy football gamers more so, I think other sports, are so driven by, you know, recent results. They love drafting things that either, you know, already happened, or they're just young players that they have no sample size, and you're trying to get ahead a little bit. Rome Odunze now has had back-to-back years where he's kind of underperformed, like, the price point he was at. And last year, I think, was a little more circumstantial. I think he probably could have ended up being one of the better values of last year. But I'm very curious to see when we get to this conversation of, like, what happened to him in season and how that manipulates how we're going forward with the Bears. I mean, the season opened hot. I mean, he had 5 touchdowns over the opening 4 games. I mean, he was over 60 yards receiving in 3 of the opening 4 games. And then, like, the wheels kind of came off. And they were starting to a little bit even before the foot injury, but he was a wide receiver 3 or better in just 2 of his final 8 games, you know, after the bye. And really, the foot injury is kind of where, like, the fulcrum point for the season happens. I mean, he was still the wide receiver 24 in expected points per game over that period, but he was the wide receiver 46 in actual points per game. And it's really, to me, when I go under the hood on Rome Odunze, and I'm curious if you find the same thing, you know, from the charting aspect, is just, like, the overlap for what they were having Rome Odunze do in the offense, unfortunately, still aligns itself with probably the most volatile aspects of Caleb Williams' game. And that, like, those things ran really well early on. And then the back half of the year, like, even isolating the foot injury, we saw those final eight games, you know, 27% of his targets were inaccurate throws. No player had a higher off-target rate with as many targets as Roma Dunze over that span. As a rookie, it was 26.7%, right on par with that. So I think the insertion of, you know, Luther Burden, where he was running routes as a rookie, and it's going to change with the, you know, the, with DJ Moore being out, and then the, you know, the insertion of Colson Loveland and a lot more 12 and 13 personnel, which we know we're going to see be static because they didn't replace DJ Moore in the offense, that it still aligns for Roma Dunze to still kind of be kind of think on the short end of terms of like his deployment versus the other two guys, as it aligns with where Caleb Williams still has his struggles in terms of accuracy. I mean, this is a guy who, we all know the awesome plays that Caleb Williams provides.
Yeah,
it's
right.
You know, but he gets himself into his own strikeouts, the outside the pocket stuff. I mean, this is a guy that's, you know, that's top five. Bo Nix does this too. He doesn't get nearly as much pushback because he doesn't make as much of the cool plays as Caleb Williams does. But like, Bo Nix is another guy. It's like, dude, just stay in the pocket one time. Just stay in the pocket, please. just stay in the pocket, brother. I mean, that's kind of where I start the conversation, and then we can kind of take it into some of the other players and stuff.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense, and I do just wonder what the rest of the season would have looked like had he not, because he first got on the injury report after the week 8 game against the Ravens. It was leading into that week 9 game against the Bengals where he goes for a zero spot despite, you know, not missing any snaps and kind of the whole situation there. But that game against the Ravens was one of his best games of the season, like right before that. So I don't know that he was necessarily like trending down or anything like that. And I think the one area that is difficult for me is that I do think he gets like kind of discussed as like an X receiver type. And I do. And obviously Ben Johnson in last year's training camp talked about him as like, he's your prototypical X receiver, but they didn't use him like a prototypical X receiver at all last year. Like, he was playing in the slot. He was moving around the formation, and kind of everybody got reps from the slot and the Z spot last year for Chicago. And that probably is going to change. At the same time, though, if we're comparing him to like a Luther Burden, there's no question that I think Luther Burden will get the easy button targets in this offense. So in a weird way, Rich, like, if Caleb Williams doesn't improve at all and he's just the player that he was last year, I think that's really, it's almost like good news for Luther Burden, because he's going to get those like easy designer targets. And Burden's role, as you mentioned, is going to change. It has to change. Otherwise, like, what is Xavier Thomas going to replace DJ Moore? Like, no, I think Luther Burden was drafted to replace DJ Moore. I said that at the time of Luther Burden being drafted. But because he gets those kind of layup targets and is really good with the ball in his hands, I think Adunze is good with the ball in his hands. But Burden is just more dynamic. There's no question about that. That's good news for Burden. But if Caleb Williams actually takes a step forward, I think you could argue that Adunze is that true downfield receiver who's the better route runner right now. I think actually that would be better news for Rome. But the things I don't think stand up to merit is kind of that he's this X receiver only type, or that like Ben Johnson didn't draft Roma Dunze. He drafted Luther Burden. He drafted Colson Love. Like, I don't really think that moves the needle for me, that he like was inherited, because he's kind of building the whole passing game out of Adunze to start last year before he got injured.
Yeah, and the worrisome part, I think, just, well, anyways, I think his ADP, I think, of the amongst the three pass catchers is still the most appealing. But it's the fact that the last two guys played that last stretch without Rome, you know, because he basically missed the last five games of the regular season. And what it allowed Ben Johnson to do, because he really took a page out of Sean McVay's playbook. I mean, Ben Johnson was watching what the Rams were doing and was like, wait a second, we have the personnel to, one, do that. Plus, we're forced to kind of do this because we lost Roma Dunze. Colson Loveland's finally healthy. We've got a viable guy in Cole Kmet that could play in the run game. And we've got this, you know, hybrid player in Loveland that can play attach in line. He can also play Y, and we can just let him play slot receiver as well. And they played from week 10 on, they were sixth in the NFL in rate of snaps and 12 personnel, and they were second in the NFL in 13 personnel rate. That's why they even added, you know, Sam Roush this offseason. Like, that's not to me, that's a big signal. It's not going away, because there was no domino after the DJ Moore. Xavier Thomas was the add to the receiver room.
Yeah.
So I've got... Yeah, I've got big signals like this is going to be a 12-13 personnel offense. And when you add Luther Burden into being part of that 12-13 personnel offense, like, where do we get restricted now on where we started with Rome at the start of last year versus where we left off, right? But I do think when you look at it from like a fantasy stance, like, he's still going to be a guy that's going to be very active, and not from an X receiver stance, but like, he's the winner in like the contested ball game, like outside of Loveland. Like, before his injury, he was the wide receiver 9 in end zone target share. Like, to me, that's still going to be his bread and butter, especially if like you're in these underdog drafts, these best ball drafts, that's not even full PPR. Like, to me, when I look at Luther Burden's ADP in those formats, I'm like, what are we really doing here? Like, this is a guy that as a rookie had 2 end zone targets. He's a very Zay Flowersian type of player. Like, are you going to be scheming up stuff for him in the money zone when you have Colston Loveland and you have Rome Odunze and you have Cole Kmet? To me, like, that's the restriction. And when I look at these Bears guys, like, I'm in on Loveland regardless. But the other two guys, I think, are more format sensitive. And I think, like, Rome's getting undervalued in these, like, formats that aren't full PPR and are a little more touchdown driven. I think that they should be, I have them very much closer together than the field does.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the right answer. And that's where, and I say that admitting that that's where,
and I love Burden too
as well. Like, yes. Oh, same. Yeah. No, I really, I think to the pushback to your Zay Flowers comparison would be that, like, oh, he's just going to be more than he was last year, you know, right? Like, and I think that there's a chance that that happens. But again, I think you could make the same case like, well, Odunze will be more than he was in the back half of last year because his foot won't, you know, he won't be playing through a foot injury. Now, it is worth saying, like, you know, he obviously had the quote about the new normal or whatever, which I think has gotten overblown. Like, would we even be discussing this if he didn't say, like, just a very honest and transparent thing? Whereas, like, we're probably not, I don't see anybody dinging, you know, Tetero McMillan for his foot injury that's actually keeping him out of practice, where, you know, Odunze is practicing and his head coach is like, yeah, he looks like the same old player to me, and, you know, whatever. So I don't know, but I mean, that is definitely, I think if it doesn't work out for Rome and he never becomes the player that I imagined him to be, like, maybe he's like, you know, Sammy Watkins, right, where he picked up a foot injury and I don't know that Watkins was ever going to be the player that he was maybe billed to be in the NFL, but he was never the same guy that he was prior to that. So I don't know. There's definitely there. I don't want to say that there's no risk with Odunze. There obviously is, but I have that kind of ranked the same way where I've got the hedge ranking, right? Where the one Bears receiver is basically back to back with the other. And I just personally think that Odunze is underrated and is to me, I've just seen more from him than I've seen from Luther Burden. So I have him ranked ahead. And I agree with you that if one of these guys is going to have like a 10 touchdown season, it's probably the X receiver who beats man coverage and you know, not necessarily what we've seen from Luther Burden so far. So we'll see. But I think that's the right answer, Rich. You got to it in a long way there, which is just like, which is for with us going to happen. We got to it in a long way that I think these guys probably should just be a little closer together than where they are in drafts right now. Like, make the case that Luther Burden should be that far ahead of Rome Odunze without saying yards per route run. And I'm not sure that you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, I still love touchdowns, man.
Yeah, touchdowns matter here enough. A guy who scored a lot of touchdowns as a rookie, did not score as many touchdowns last year. Brian Thomas Jr. Is our next player to discuss here. Wide receiver 31 ADP, obviously one of the biggest disappointments of last season, real life, fantasy football, whatever you want to say. Where are you at with BTJ entering this season? I think we've done a lot of discussion and we don't have to necessarily go back into what went wrong for him last year. It was everything. And obviously another guy, like, you can't talk about these three players that we're talking about right now, Rome, BTJ, and then Marvin Harrison Jr. without, and honestly, this entire class without bringing up injuries, and BTJ certainly played through injuries last year. So I almost kind of want to wipe the slate clean from what we saw last year, but maybe you could tell me that's wrong. Where are you at with BTJ as we head into his third season?
Well, I find the Jaguars one of the more top-down compelling teams, you know, this offseason and everything that's transpired. I mean, they had this real sliding doors moment, you know, with the Travis Hunter injury. I mean, you know, coming out of that game in London, you know, there was all that talk going into the bye. He was going to, like, take this, you know, extended role, and he gets the knee injury. At that point, Brian Thomas Jr. was already nicked up with a shoulder injury. It kind of pushes them to not only make the trade for Jacoby Myers, but then they have to lean into Parker Washington being this full-time player. Before the Travis Hunter injury, Parker Washington had 17 catches on the season. Like, and then from that point on, the marriage of what they found, you know, offensively, you know, really kind of hummed and made a lot of sense. You know, after that week eight bye, the Jaguars went 9-1. They had the league best. They were number one in the NFL point differential over that span. But what it did, it has allowed all these guys to kind of find their niche in the offense. You know, Parker Washington was playing, you know, this slot Z role. You had the same thing with Jacoby Myers. And then it pushed, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. into like this vertical outside receiver role, but what you hear talked about in all these practices. So I find that very interesting. So if Brian Thomas Jr. is going to be this guy that when you look at over that stretch was averaging almost 16 air yards per target, but a 28% deep ball rate, which is like Kayshon Boutte, Alec Pierce level stuff. Like that's really hard to like carve out like a consistent fantasy role. And then, you know, how does Travis Hunter finish it? And then, coming into the draft, James Gladstone's like, what if we drafted a bunch of tight ends? And then his quotes afterwards didn't even really make like a lot of sense. His quotes were like, well, the rest of the league is doing it, so we're going to do it too.
We're going to do it.
And I'm like, well, and I'm like, well, wait, you guys found like you were the best offense in the NFL, like going to 11 personnel and you found your 11 personnel roles. Like, let's not do that. One, your backfield's kind of a mess. Your offensive line really isn't that good. Like, what if we just leaned into what really worked the back half here? I hope Liam Cohen is smart enough to like overrule a lot of this that's like kind of like transpired this offseason. But we got to, how does Hunter fit into this? Like, there's all these things that move into place here that like I, from a fantasy projection stance, I can see the upside case for BTJ still because like I have a player talent, but inversely, yeah, from Rome Odunze, like I struggle like to find like the role he actually fits into, like when this is all working. And I feel like I can like arbitrage that from fantasy. Like there are a lot of guys doing that. And I hope I'm wrong about that, but I fully believe in Parker Washington as a player. And out of the things that we talked about led the show with, like what was real in the back half sample size, the small sample sizes, I actually do believe like what Parker Washington did the back half was a lot more real than something like what a Michael Wilson did the back half of last year.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's funny because I actually think I maybe have more optimism about Wilson, and I'm actually really a big fan of Parker Washington as a player. I actually liked him a lot as a prospect and called him like a Bud Light Golden Tate. And honestly, now he's just kind of Golden Tate. Like he just plays a lot like Golden Tate. His reception perception charting is very, very similar to Golden Tate, honestly. Especially if you look at him, like people don't realize this, Rich. He didn't play more than 60% of his snaps in the slot in any game until after week 15, like Parker Washington, that is. He was getting a lot of burn at the beginning of the season as kind of like a reserve outside
for
receiver
Brown.
For this team. Yeah, for which was a pretty horrendous signing. And to your point about Liam Cohen, like, he even said, I think, after the draft, he's like, well, there's a lot of receivers I want to get on the field. So I don't know that we're necessary. He kind of pushed back on the whole idea that they're going to be like a 12 personnel heavy offense. But I think Parker Washington's role is here to stay. I think it's just this whole situation reminds me a lot of the Packers, honestly, not what we've known of the Packers recently, where it's going to be a four receiver rotation because there's no question. That Travis Hunter is going to play some wide receiver this year. So I think that's going to happen. Then when you look at like Jacoby Myers, I still believe in him. He led the team in routes after from December on through the playoffs. Like, I think he's not going anywhere. And I think the player that BTJ was as a rookie is still in there somewhere. And the funny part of it, Rich, is that when he was this dynamic receiver for the Jaguars at the back half of his rookie season, he was still like not a sacrificial X. Like, he was getting a lot of designed stuff and he was playing some Z receiver for that team that year. And I think he could be that guy. It's just hard to make the math work for all of these players. But let me pitch to you the way that this does work out. Even if he is the vertical X receiver in Liam Cohen's offense, if his role looks more like Mike Evans from 2024, like he's that X receiver, which Liam Cohen's X receiver in 2024 was Mike Evans, and he had 11.6 air yards per target and was the outside boundary receiver, but just wasn't running a bunch of like go routes. I think that's how it works out for BTJ. And to me, like, I think if somebody hits a ceiling outcome from this Jaguars receiver room, it like has to be him. and I don't think it can be Parker Washington.
He's definitely scoring
Jacoby
more
Myers.
Than two touchdowns.
Well, yeah, I would say that's probably happening. But I just think if somebody hits a ceiling outcome here I think it has to be BTJ. Like, if somebody's a wide receiver one, let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think it can be Parker Washington. I don't think it can be Myers. And unless Hunter just plays full time wide receiver, I don't think it can be him either.
Yeah, and I think that also when you talk about Hunter, he's going to play, but like their cornerback room is such a mess that he's kind of more needed, at least for 2026 in isolation. Yes. If they have an injury, right? Like, you have to expect, like, you're not going to get all your cornerbacks through 17 games either. So like, he's probably just going to be needed to log more snaps because of just the way the 2026 depth chart plays out, the dynamic of that. We need that to happen because when you look at the for BTJ in your example, because when you look at if he's going to be playing more, you know, X regardless, I mean, the Jaguars, I mean, they're opening gauntlet like for perimeter wide receiver play. Like, look at the cornerbacks that they're going to play. And I'm not like a big cornerback wide receiver matchup guy, but like, if he's going to be playing that type of role, and like, we open with Denzel Ward, Patrick Surtain, Christian Gonzalez, DJ Turner, Quinyon Mitchell, and Derek Stingley, I'm like, brother,
it's like, gonna be tough. Get ready for a lot more post routes from the slot for Parker Washington. Like, that's what's happening if that's the case.
We're gonna need some work. It does get better after they have like a week 7 bye and things open up, but like, I could see a real dynamic where like the Jaguars over like the opening month and a half of the season, just like Brian Thomas Jr. just catches the brunt of what they face. Because their team also, like, we have to anticipate some regression too. Like, remember, the Jaguars had 110 points off takeaways last year. They had a league high 30 possessions starting the opposing territory. This is not that good of a defense. Like, I promise you, this is not, when you look at this Jaguar defense. Trevor Lawrence had 9 touchdowns that started in opposition field territory. He was second in fantasy points scored. Travis Etienne or Achan was the leader in that category. Like, there's just gonna be some natural regression and some of that stuff too as well. So to me, it's just a hard team to project, like you said. I could definitely see a scenario where if there's a wide receiver one, it is Brian Thomas Jr., but like, what are the odds we get a wide receiver one out of this group?
Yeah, I don't think it's high. I just think that's why he should be ranked the most, like the highest of these guys, because I think he has his case. Like, if they're the Packers, he would be Romeo Doubs because he's on the field the most as the X receiver, even when they go to like 12 personnel and 13 personnel, if and when they do that. And he just would be a better version of a significantly better version of Romeo Doubs if he's anywhere close to the player he was in 2024 now that he's healthier. So, yeah, tricky wide receiver room to figure out. And I ultimately do think it will be kind of a moving target for us in fantasy football, which will be definitely a treat and nobody will be upset about it. I lock this in right now. One of, if not both, Brian Thomas Jr. and or Parker Washington is absolutely leading the week one panic meter show on this feed, because people are going to be upset with one or the other, or maybe both, based on a usage standpoint after the first week of the season. The overreactions will be there, Rich.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, it's opening 6 games, plus you factor in the bye week where you're not using them in your lineup. Like, that's like, there's never going to be, I think, a week going into setting your lineup where you're like bullish. I mean, like, well, I got Brian Thomas Jr. this week. Like, it's just, there just isn't one of those spots, man. It does get better. Like, I could see like some of these guys being like low advance rate players, but then if you get them through and like you have like week 16 at Dallas or week 17 against the Commanders, and you're like, all right, I feel good here, but like, you got to get to the dance with those guys. And that means you're taking, you know, a Brian Thomas Jr. over Roma Dunze, who we talked about, right? Over some guys maybe you like a little bit below him too. He goes ahead of some of these other guys we're going to talk about that maybe you're just more optimistic, on them guys finding, you know, a projectable projectable lens more so than Brian Thomas Jr.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the guy who was drafted first in that NFL draft back in 2024 at the wide receiver position. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it's time. I've saved it for its own individual section of the show here, Rich. Marvin Harrison Jr., a fraught conversation, a tough conversation, one maybe we could have spent an entire hour on. I have a lot of feelings about Marv. I have a lot of thoughts about Marv, but I'm curious, where are you with Marvin Harrison Jr.? What we've seen so far, how bright is the light to leave on, if at all, and where are you at with him for 2026?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, we did a show on my channel where you and I were together, and we did like a 30-minute segment on this, like going into year two, just how much of a conundrum it was, not for Marv the player, but like his deployment, the marriage of his scheme and quarterback, like all of these things, like, just were kind of puzzling for us, and they still existed to a degree. Then, like, we kind of get this thing blown up in the middle of the season, right, for Marvin Harrison Jr. One, he starts the year kind of like with some, like, some mental issues, right? Like, he definitely was in
weird
his own
drops,
space. Like,
he had
a huge drop against, like, the 49. Well, he opened the season with, like, a touchdown against the Saints, but, like, Kyler misses him on what could have been, like, a 90-yard touchdown. Week three, he has, like, a clear, like, 50, 60-yard gain against the 49ers. He just bricks and puts down. Opens up that Thursday night game in Seattle where he has the interception kind of careen off of him. And then he caught like the game tying touchdown at the time, or the go ahead touchdown. And you could see in his head, like, it was just like such
got
a
got on his knees, like the relief.
You could just see it. Yep. Oh my God, dude, you could see it. And then, like, we have this span where the offense is going to transition with the Kyler foot injury, and he never gets a part of it, like, for real. Like, you know, he has the concussion in Jacoby Brissett's first game. He comes back from that. He cooks, absolutely, like, slaughters Dallas, right? And I know a bunch of wide receivers cooked them, but that was the one where CeeDee Lamb, he beats De'Ron Bland at goal line, and CeeDee Lamb's like, even like, oh my God, like, what happened right there? The next week they get absolutely just flooded by Seattle in that just like absolutely just atrocity of a game. He has an appendectomy. He comes immediately back and has a 30% target share in the first half against Tampa Bay, and then injures his ankle, and like he plays like, you know, no snaps the rest of the season. So like, what is there like a almost a sliding doors moment where like he doesn't have like what Michael Wilson put on the field the back half, but like he is really productive and he would have hit for fantasy gamers because of all the elements that went into play for the Arizona Cardinals the back half? They were there on their fifth running back, they were down four offensive linemen, they were down just all their defensive backs, and they're just dropping back and throwing the ball, you know, 45 times a game. Like, would he have hit for fantasy purposes? We'll never officially know, but we do know for a fact, like, at any point that he played over that stretch, like, he completely relegated Michael Wilson again. Like, it happened. Even over that stretch, he was hurt. Yeah. I mean, they ran 327 routes together on the field last year, and Wilson was targeted on 12% of them. He had less than a yard per route run, right? And even over on the 56 plays after week 10, when he had all those injuries, 30% target rate with Harrison sideline for Michael Wilson versus a 17.9%. So it went up to even 17.9. It's like not a level where we have a fantasy starter. So I don't know. But when you look at it as it applies to this particular season, I can't be in, Matt. And it's because the Arizona Cardinals are not going to be, one, running a serious operation this year again. And then two, like, they got absolutely bludgeoned. Like, this is it. The NFL, like, we know your strength of schedule before the schedule is actually set. But what the NFL did to the Arizona Cardinals and what they have, like, in terms of roster, it's like, it's just, it stinks, man. Like, dude, they opened this year with 9 games against all, like, almost Super Bowl contenders, and they only play 3 home games over that span. Chargers, Seahawks, 49ers, you get Giants one in there, Lions, Rams, Broncos, Cowboys, Seahawks, Rams, Chiefs, Commanders, all before their week 14 bye. They have a late bye. We're gonna see probably Carson Beck for the fantasy playoffs because they just won't have enough wins to not take a look at him with what they're going to be staring down the gun barrel of another quarterback. I've taken some of these guys in best ball leagues because, like, hey, you say the playoff schedule, maybe low advance rate, we get one of these guys through. But, like, the Arizona Cardinals are a team from a managed league standpoint. I'm not drafting any of their players.
I think that's probably the correct answer. And here's, before we go back to some of the context-based stuff that you talk about from the 2025 season, I do want to just piggyback on that point there, Rich, because I know this is not, like, helpful for the listeners. It's not, like, actionable advice, but I'm going to talk about me for a second here. I think one thing I've learned about myself as an analyst, and just, like, the way to keep my, like, protect my peace in a way, is that, like, I'm going to be emotionally invested in Marv succeeding no matter what. Like, in some level, because I very firmly believe that he has been better as an individual player than credited. And it is a lot of these, like, circumstantial things that you talked about, and some of the things we discussed prior to last year, where it was, hey, you know, he's just like a not that great of a fit with Kyler Murray. I don't think Drew Petzing's the guy to like figure out the whole Wilson Harrison dynamic, which now at this point we know he definitely will. And I think Petzing's gotten too much crap from the fantasy space over the course of the last few years, but I think we definitely know he was not the guy, because I mean, we've seen it now. Like, he could never manage, like, how do I get Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison going from even an alignment standpoint? So that's settled. Again, because I'm already invested in that happening, I don't then need to double down on that with like spending the next month and a half telling my listeners to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. in fantasy. Like, I think that, and so I don't need it, but you told me to draft Marvin Harrison. Well, I'm probably with Rich here. I think there's a lot of reasons not to draft any Cardinals players, but I'm invested in a way in this all working out that if it works, I'm going to be happy even if he's not on any of my fantasy rosters. So again, I know that's not actionable advice, but yeah, I'm with Rich that the right answer from a fantasy managed standpoint is probably not to draft these guys, but I do believe it can work out for this Cardinals offense, because I actually like LaFleur as the play caller here.
They're from a talent perspective, you can sell yourself, right? Like, you know, that this all can be a marriage in terms of collective talent. I just think we're probably another year away from it like being actual on the football field, because of just like everything that happened to them the back half of the year that circumstantially propelled them into these game environments, and then just like what they have ahead of them in this like clear turnover, right? I mean, they're another team, yes, that's like very clearly signaling to us that they're like, they want to play in as many rock fights as possible, especially with this schedule. And I think that's probably more applicable to like maybe like where Trey McBride's going than anyone else. But you hire Mike LaFleur as head coach, you bring in Nathaniel Hackett as offensive coordinator. The second free agency opens, you sign four offensive linemen, Sayamalu, Elijah Wilkerson, Matt Pryor, Ole Udoh. You sign Tyler Allgeier before you even know you're going to make this move at pick three to take Jeremiah Love. And then you go and you use your next pick at the top of the second round, pick 34, and Chase Besantis. Like, they want to just, they're just trying to hang on for dear life, I think, this year. Like, they're just hoping to play as many high variance games as possible. And hopefully that leads to some accidental wins to them. But I think when you just look at their layout, though, like, it's just really hard to objectively say, like, they're going to overcome this right. slate. Like, they got absolutely crushed, man.
They got crushed, and they obviously just like don't have the quarterback to shoot their way out of this problem. There's just that's the tough thing here. Even if you like what Brissett did beyond the fantasy scam last year, when he dropped back 745 times, or the Cardinals dropped back 745 times last year, 57 more than any other team in the NFL. So yeah, again, I think that we'll revisit the Marvin Harrison Jr. as a fantasy pick for 2027, but for 2026, I think we can all collectively just like root for him to get it going. Because again, for me, I've said this a lot on the show, I do think he's been better. He's been disappointing, no question. Like, there's no way you can say he hasn't been disappointing as a player. But I don't think he's been as bad, maybe as people would kind of frame it so far. But that is going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, we're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation with some deeper names. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. I think we've talked all of the, well, maybe not all the bigger names, but the guys going at least in the top 100 picks for fantasy this year. But I want to talk about three guys who are going inside the top. They're not all going in the same exact range, but there are three guys that we think you know, could be potentially good, but maybe could go one way or the other here. I want to talk about Ricky Pearsall, ADP wide receiver 46, Xavier Worthy, wide receiver 49, and because this is my show, we're grouping in Jalen Coker here, wide receiver 56. All right, so these are all the other guys going in the top 60 wide receivers right now. Rich, any of these guys really stand out to you as big leap candidates? Where are you at with Pearsall, Worthy, Jalen Coker? I give them to you as a grab bag. You take any one of them there.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, I'm interested still from like these best ball stances, but I'm worried about the managed league stuff as always. I mean, trying to get out of that shell, right? Like, we've been doing these best ball drafts at this point of summer, and I'm trying to formulate like, all right, I've been drafting a lot of Ricky Pearsall because it's easy to find like the avenues, right? You know, we believe in the offense still. This is a player that's still been really productive when he's played, right? Like, I mean, you look at last year. I mean, he still, you know, opened the season like really strongly. Even when he came back, was productive. And it's just like, all right, I believe in this player. If something were to happen to Mike Evans, a guy who's 33, has been on the injury report with a hamstring injury 5 years in a row, like they're like all these doors open. It's like we can really get this run out still with Ricky Pearsall. And then I'm just like, all right, if everything stays at face value, how does Ricky Pearsall score any touchdowns on this team? So he's still like a guy I'm very interested in. Well, I mean, Mike Evans just like, because even last year, he just commands so many of those right. money targets, man. I mean, on the field last year, he had a 58% end zone target share. Like to add some context to that, Devontae Adams, who set the record for end zone targets, had a 57%. Like this is still a guy like, and he's, and Evans, it's easy to find the contingent path for Pearsall, but like if Evans is going to play and be healthy in this offense, like he's just such a structurally good fit to just do all the routes that they're going to ask him to do. And like one,
right.
Like all these like deep digs, it's like he's going to kill on these, man. Like, but the one thing I will say, the Evans addition, it kind of allows Pearsall to like go back to play more of a role he had as a rookie year. And like, so yep. that is kind of exciting as well, too. Like, I think we'll see more slot snaps for Ricky Pearsall in year two and not just as much like deep vertical stuff. Cause, you know, he had the high yards per catch last year, but, you know, the depth of target was way high. And it killed his yak stuff. His yak stuff died because, like, you know, yak and ADOT are, there's a marriage here as well mm-hmm. in terms of depth of target and that all sort of too. So if he just stay on the field and he's going to be a dynamic player, I think he'll be like a really volatile fantasy player while the offense is in totality. Cause you know, we're going to get Kittle back too at some point, maybe even sooner than the expectations were given where the injury had and the timing of it. But Ricky Pearsall is a definite player. I think when you look at it, he's like, he's still a good player in an offensive ecosystem we believe in. So I'm interested at this price point because he has a lot more avenues to get there.
Now it's all really well said there. And I agree with you. Like to me, Ricky Pearsall is an objectively good player. I mean, 58.7 yards per game. Like he's been, that was second among the group. If you behind Malik Nabers last year, like he was good. Even if you don't do the, and if you take out this game when he was coming back from injury, all that stuff, like, and if you start doing that, then it's like, oh yeah, Ricky Pearsall is actually really good. And by the way, the other guy who did that was Kyle Shanahan in the postseason presser when he was like, well, he really only had like four healthy games. He was awesome in those four healthy mm-hmm. games last year. So I do think that Pearsall is, again, anybody with eyeballs can tell that Ricky Pearsall can play. In a weird way, though, you kind of outlined with the Mike Evans of it all and the yak why it's a little bit odd figuring out where he fits here, because yes, the contingent value would be really good for Pearsall if Mike Evans goes down. But I also think the Evans addition in terms of him taking over that on ball vertical X receiver role actually really frees up Ricky Pearsall, which you mentioned. So you almost like don't want Mike Evans to get hurt in that way.
That's true.
But then if Evans is healthy and he goes to like doing more yak stuff, I mean, Ricky Pearsall might be one of the worst tackle breaking receivers I've ever charted. I mean, it's like break one tackle, please, Ricky Pearsall. And I know some of that is, again, the ADOT and the role and everything like that. It's going to be easier for him to break tackles if he's getting more layup targets, which he got almost none of last year. However, I just think that like this is the tough part with Pearsall as a fantasy pick, where I think where he goes right now, I'm taking him there. No question about that. It's just the ceiling of him if the role doesn't work out, or if Mike, like there's some just ways that this can go in a variety of different directions. But I think you and I share mm-hmm. real optimism about Pearsall, the player. And I do think he's a good fantasy pick where he goes right now. A player I like don't really have a good handle on, Rich, is Xavier Worthy. Because if I'm being like just radical candor here, I was lower on Xavier Worthy as a prospect. I didn't think he should go that high. I thought that was kind of crazy for the Chiefs to take him where they did. And everybody's like, oh man, they're going to tear up the league. It's like, well, there's come on, 165 pounds. Like, I don't care how fast he is in a straight line at the NFL scouting combine. Truly doesn't move the needle. And obviously hasn't been great for Worthy so far. However, again, radical honesty here. Would he have had that poor of a season, Rich, last year if him and Travis Kelce didn't collide on a mesh route in week one after like four snaps or whatever? I think probably not. But how excited can you get about Worthy right now at wide receiver 49 ADP?
I mean, the Chiefs in general feels odd to say. I mean, they're just an offense that are a little bit head scratching coming into this offseason. We talked about the receiver room post-draft last year of just like how it all fit together, and it's like, how are they envisioning this, you know, really working? And it didn't. you have this, you know, I mean, you have this just unique player in Rashee Rice when you're funneling like that much of your offense to like that type of a role, like almost like a Deebo Samuel's like X fashion, but you don't have like any other lid lifters, right? Like when Kyle Shanahan was making this work with Deebo, I mean, they had Brandon Ayuk and they had like these guys that can win over the top. You had George Kittle. You now have a 37-year-old Travis Kelce. And yeah, you want Xavier Worthy to be the fast guy to open the lid off defenses, but also Xavier Worthy, even going back to Texas, like he's always struggled downfield because he struggles. He doesn't stack with his body. Like if you put hands on him,
he can't get open. He's too small. It's like, I don't care how fast you are. You can't get open. If you can't get all press man coverage.
And we've seen this happen to Mahomes. I'm going to drop some stuff here that I don't think people know is real about Patrick Mahomes right now. Over the past 3 years, Patrick Mahomes, 17th in the NFL in completion rate, 23rd in yards per pass attempt, 20th in touchdown rate. He has a lower touchdown rate than Tua Tagovailoa in each of the past 3 years. He's 20th in interception rate. Yikes. We've seen now the overlap of when Patrick Mahomes exploded, the marriage of him and Apex Tyreek Hill and Apex Travis Kelce has kind of like ingrained in our brains that like we're going to be chasing this forever. And the Kansas City Chiefs have done nothing to fix their issues. When you look at Mahomes against man coverage, 26th in quarterback rating, 21st in completion rate. I thought this offseason we would see legitimate wholesale changes, even layering in the off the field stuff with Rashee Rice. Like this should have been on their brains as well. And they really have said the only thing we're going to do to change this offense is add Kenneth Walker.
Bring back Eric Bieniemy. Like, soft fire Matt Nagy and bring back Eric Bieniemy.
And you're in like a competitive division. Like you play good teams. Like I still struggle to see like are we just going to be chasing this like Chiefs bounce back for years that like this is just never going to come to fruition.
I wanted to let you finish the thing that like was I'm like, Don't interrupt. But I really wanted to interrupt when you said, you know, peak Tyreek Hill, peak Travis Kelce. I would also posit that you have to also say their peak Andy Reid, because this sounds like such a dumbass thing to say. And it is that to say for a guy doing a podcast from his home office talking about one of the best football coaches of all time.
I'm walking in the Hall of Fame.
Moonwalking into the Hall of Fame, brother. Like Andy Reid is going to forget more about football than I will learn in 10 lifetimes. Okay. And so now that I've said all that, it's just, you watch this Chiefs offense and it's not even close to what everybody else is doing right now. Like all the smart buttons that good play callers are pushing right now, this stuff is so antiquated at this stage. And that's where you get into, like, honestly, for as much as I've talked about Rashee Rice and some of the flaws of his game, you outlined it perfectly there, Rich. Like the fact that Rashee Rice, like in my player comparison tool, it is Deebo Samuel. Like he gets two, his top three comps are Deebo Samuel, Kadarius Toney's rookie season, which is funny, and then another Deebo Samuel season. Like that's the best comp for him. There's nothing inherently wrong with that player. It's just you need the system and like a man coverage beater to go around him. And like their best man coverage beating receiver right now is Cyrus Allen, a day three draft pick from this past year. It's just like you can't live that way. So I really honestly, I like Kenneth Walker, but like all of these pass game players, I haven't even been like remotely excited to draft or interested in drafting, especially with all the just chaos around Rice. And that's even while admitting that I think Worthy can be a better player than he was last year, because again, if I'm doing the injuries for Rome and BTJ and Marvin Harrison and all these guys I really, really like, I got to also be fair and say for a player that I was a little lower on, he also should have some injury context here as well.
Yeah, I mean, we did this a little bit with Tom Brady. Like you think of that end run of New England compared to what he went over to in Tampa Bay in terms of just like surrounding talent. And like, you're like, oh yeah, Tom Brady can still play football. But we're in kind of that mode here, and we haven't gotten to Patrick Mahomes coming off of a freaking torn ACL. Even if they want to push some of these easy buttons by the addition of Kenneth Walker and having more of a run game under center than they've traditionally had, like, are you doing that earlier in the year with Patrick Mahomes, you know, having him turn his back to the defense coming off of a torn ACL, right? Like, those are all kind of variables here that we've got to kind of factor in. So it's just really hard for me to get like excited. I think that this price point on Xavier Worthy, if you're making me say like I have to take a Chiefs receiver, I'm probably taking Worthy where he goes versus Rashee Rice, which sounds also stupid to say because Rashee Rice has been so good from a fantasy per target basis. And like, should we even care if they're just going to keep doing the same thing? But I mean, they're another team too. Like you don't feel like great about a lot of their spots. I mean, especially the back half of the year, like when it's fantasy crunch time and you're going at Los Angeles. I mean, like Cincinnati could be a fun shootout, but like they're a team that like is going to, I think, play the pass a lot better and played the pass a lot better than anyone realized last year. And then now they're going to be good against the run this year with all the moves that they made up front. You're going, you know, against New England, right? Like the 49ers are definitely way better against the pass this year than they were. And you have the Chargers. Like, it's just like there's just not a lot of spots to really feel bullish about this offense. So it's just kind of where I'm at with these guys. It's really tough because I think that this team, and this happened to Josh Allen and the Bills a little bit, and I think they've walked back on it a little earlier. It's just like it's hard when you have a player as good as Patrick Mahomes to not build your roster with some hubris, and that happened to them, and it kind of caught up a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the
Chiefs, and they've decided to fix the defense first. Like they've invested to fix the defense more of this offseason than to say like, hey, we'll deal with Travis Kelce if this is his last year, or if we don't have Rashee Rice on the roster next year. Like, we'll deal with that next year. That's a next year problem.
I do think that offense personnel wise is going to look pretty different in 2027. Last one here in this bucket, Jalen Coker, wide receiver 56. I mean, I could do my 100th, you know, kind of lap on Jalen Coker and how awesome I think he is as an individual player. And he's going to just so far outproduce, not even just some of the guys, you know, we will talk about on the rest of the show, but even some of the guys I said at the top that are just like complete whiffs of this class, you know, the Jalen Polks, the Javon Bakers, the Malachi Corleys, the Roman Wilsons, and these guys. There is even some other names that I still have, like the Luke McCaffreys, right? There's some guys I still even have like the light left on for that he's going to just way outproduce him, because I really do think he is that good. But from a fantasy standpoint, Rich, like how excited can you get about Jalen Coker? Like, do you have any you're already shaking your head for the audio listeners. I don't know if that indicates your response, but how excited can you get for a Jalen Coker in a Panthers passing game led by Bryce Young, despite the fact that the Panthers are now committed to Coker as their wide receiver two with a new contract?
Right. And then, you know, they asked like Chris Brazel to kind of maybe take away some of those like just hollow outside routes, which I hope for the love of everything, they don't have Terrell McMillan running. But this is, I mean, you just kind of like, you're asking me, I'm not going to push back on anyone's like wide receiver 50, right? Like if you're like, I love the wide receiver 50, by all means, dude, fire, shoot it all day, man. Gosh, absolutely go nuts, man. Like absolutely go crazy. But you're asking me to like we can't, I don't even know if Tedder McMillan's a good pick where he's going, because infrastructure, like and I know Tedder McMillan's like a really good player, and I'm very bullish on,
but really good player, yeah.
We have a system here, like it might be, maybe we're at the end of the line, but like we're asking how many guys that, because Bryce Young going to make relevant. This is a team that, you know, they're 29th in the league in pass rate below expectation. Bryce Young threw for 200 yards four times last year. Four times. Like how am I supposed to like that excited, right? And I hope that like the insertion of Brazel at least allows like these guys to like he's the guy that's just running like the empty calorie stuff, and then we can get some of this, because I do have some of the same questions with McMillan this year, not as a player, but in terms of deployment and marriage with quarterback, that like we spent 35 minutes talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. last year,
100%, right?
Like,
yes.
Like, you know, you have a quarterback that, like, you know, is not throwing the ball downfield, is not letting these things rip outside the numbers, but you also are using this player. And Tedder McMillan, from as a prospect and through 1 year in the NFL, is better at, like, the breaking tackle, get him in space more than, like, Marv has shown. Like, it's more of a step of faith for Marv. But you don't have the marriage with the QB yet. And you're trying to hide the QB. Like, there's anecdotal evidence that the Carolina Panthers are another one of these teams, like, let's just try to keep the game as close as possible and let's hope it swings away in our direction, right? Like, that's how the structure they've played under Dave Canales, and they're probably going to do it again, man. The offensive line is healthier. The defense is actually, for the Carolina Panthers, is really good. And another thing that I wrote about last year, like, they're actually, like, low-key one of the good teams at, like, stopping the easy button stuff. that happens. Like, look at all the good quarterbacks they gave fits last year. Brock Purdy was awful against them. Jordan Love struggled against them. Matthew Stafford was efficient against them, but they threw enough wrenches in Matthew Stafford to create turnovers and give themselves the win both of those games. They won one of the games, and then they almost won the playoff game against them. But like, so their defense, I think, is really a lot better than anyone realizes, too. So, like, what's going to, like, push the Carolina Panthers to, like, having this high pass rate over expectation and, like, this guns a-blazing offense? It's hard for me to get there, man.
So the only thing I would say, if I was to devil's advocate this, which I don't know if I really believe this, but I think there's at least some thought process here, is that, one, they have changed play callers. Dave Canales is not calling plays anymore. It's going to be Brad Idzik. Now, Brad Idzik has been like Dave Canales' guy forever. They go back to like Seattle together. So I don't know that really moves the needle here, but you could at least pinpoint that with also them drafting Chris Brazel. And I think
that's fair.
Still keeping Leggett in here, and say, like, this might be. And if you just look at Bryce Young, he's been much more efficient when they've spread the field, when they've gone empty, as opposed to getting very big, heavy, and condensed, which is, I think, like, what Dave Canales wants to be. Like, I think he wants to be in these multiple tight end formations and run the football and all that stuff. But the quarterback that he's with right now just, like, isn't good at that stuff. He's better when you can spread it out, and he can play point guard and shoot it all over the field like that. And, like, but that's a pet theory, right? You can't say, like, all right, we're going to draft Tedrick McMillan at wide receiver 11, and we're going to put Jalen Coker at wide receiver 40 because of my little pet theory. But it's just something that, like, I'm going to monitor them in training camp. And if it sounds like they're going in that direction, I might be a little more optimistic about the pass game than what we've seen so far. But that is, again, a leap of faith based on unknown information. But again, that would be the only devil's advocate I would have here.
It's a good one. To be fair, it at least is a good one.
It's good-ish.
Because we've seen that.
It's good-ish.
The problem is, too, is I think, like, you know, we talk about even with, like, a guy like Kyler, and they're not, like, it's not a complete overlap, but, like, a lot of these guys that with the NFL, as it's gone more condensed, like, that's, and it's restricted to you throwing underneath over the middle of the field, and Bryce is a better middle field thrower than Kyler is, and he was in college, but,
totally.
Like, this is where, like, the physicality,
which is a key difference between the McMillan
up.
Stuff and Harrison thing, is that, the Bryce Young, for all of his flaws, is actually, for the short guys, much better at throwing over the middle than a Kyler. That's a key difference between the two guys.
Yeah, it's just that he still is an undersized quarterback in this current defensive meta where, like, we're just restricting everything into, like, the short area of the field. But I do like at least that shout of, like, saying, hey, you know, maybe they are going to swerve more into, like, these things that worked for them in pockets of last season versus, you know, I'm looking at him like, all right, the defense is good. The offensive line is at least projected to be healthier than it was last year. And I know, when he was injured, but you had Jonathan Brooks coming back. Obviously Mitchell Evans is like an awesome road grade. Like, he's awesome in the blocking game, can kind of be one of these hybrid guys. So it's just like, what does the offense actually look like? And I think that's what's going to be the turning point, right? I think if you're drafting Tedrick McMillan, you need the outcome that you laid out, like where they are just playing more open and they're leaning into at least even if they're not going to extend Bryce Young and give him a contract extension after this year, this is the path for fantasy football that we have to hope for to have these guys deliver at cost. Because, I mean, Tedrick McMillan's going against, the guys he's going against, we talked about some of them.
That's tough. No, I'm glad you said that because, and obviously this is supposed to be about Jalen Coker, but it's a really good point about McMillan, who goes much earlier. And I'm probably going to end up having him ranked lower than consensus just because of that. It's a risk. It's a real risk with just the ecosystem and the environment there when there's so many other good players. I mean, like, for the life of me, I don't understand why Tedrick McMillan should go ahead of Jalen Waddle, for example. And I mean, I'm a big Waddle guy this year, but yeah, I mean, that's just one that doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean,
much
all
less
those guys, Flowers. I mean, yeah, you have like the Flowers. I mean, even, you know, when you get to guys like Egbuka, who had a almost adjacent McLaurin rookie type season, but just plays in an offense that you're like, dude, I know what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to do. Like, and I look at the Bucks, and like, I look at their, like, the Bucks really remind me too structurally of like those Lions teams that, like, because their front seven is gnarly, and like they're not going to get run on at all, but their secondary, especially losing Jamel Dean, like, they're going to be like those teams. It's like, you should think about being a little worse against the run than what you are right now, because you're just making teams attack you at like your weakest point. So I think the Bucs are a team, like, they're going to play in a bunch of shootouts. We've kind of skirted around Christian Watson, and he'll always have haters because until he stays healthy, that'll exist throughout McLaurin. Like, but those are all guys where I'm like, these guys have as much downside still as a McMillan, and I can talk myself into a cheaper cost of having maybe as much upside. And I believe in the quarterback and the play caller, maybe a little bit more.
All right, real quick before we get into some sleepers and get out of here, two guys to just discuss in that they're not the Malachi Corleys and the Jermaine Burtons and the Roman Wilsons, but they certainly they've not lived up to where they've been drafted so far. That is Xavier Leggett, who plays for those very same Carolina Panthers, and Keon Coleman. Those guys are going off the board. Wide receiver 123 for Xavier Leggett, but he was a first round pick in the NFL draft, and Keon Coleman was an early second round pick, wide receiver 86. Is it over for those two guys, Rich Rebar?
Leggett, I just don't know what he plays as far as like a receiver, yeah, right? Like, I just don't know what position you have. And I think that was in his college profile. And like,
yeah,
he's a guy you take on day two.
This
day
outcome
three
is not shocking at all. Like, so far, like,
he just shouldn't
first
have been
pick,
thrown in.
No, correct. Yes.
You should have been thrown to the deep end like this. Like, you know, obviously Keon Coleman, I think the Bills did know a little bit what they were getting, and they thought that's what they wanted with Josh Allen, because you had Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid in that offense. And I think it's easy to convince yourself like that archetype of player is what you needed, but you kind of don't need that with Josh Allen. Like, you just don't. So I think like them getting just a guy that can create his own space and get open. Like, I thought Josh Allen's quote after the signing of DJ Moore was like very vital. I think we talked about it with Jordan Tyson during the draft stuff, where he was like, kind of like, I don't care if you run our 12 out, out route call, if you want to run it 14, 16 yards, like, I'm the type of quarterback, like, I'm good enough to read your body and what you're doing, but like, I'm buying time and doing those things. Like, Keon Coleman doesn't have that gene in him. That's not like what he does. So he's just kind of, I think, is just a victim of just like being like an archetype of a player that didn't fit like really what Josh Allen needed. And then also kind of being an archetype of player that just like doesn't really win in today's NFL. As well, like in this Fangio, you know, cover four, you know, we're gonna play umbrella coverage, roll match coverage everywhere. Like, it's just real tough, man.
Yeah, like, I think there's a way that Coleman can still be a useful player for Buffalo if he just takes his career more seriously. Like, that's also part of this that we should talk about, is that he like just obviously did not take last year seriously. Yeah. He didn't work as hard as he should have. And if he does do that, like, again, there's a path where he's a useful player, even if I don't know that ever materializes into fantasy or anything close to what he was drafted to be. But yeah,
he's not as good, but he's not as good. But you would like to just see him like try to turn into like the way like Michael Pittman's been used. Like, just
and that's the other thing too, is that it not only is it going to take a attitude change or whatever, work ethic change for Keon Coleman, it also is going to require him to be deployed differently than he's been so far in the NFL, where he has been an outside vertical X receiver. And I mean, again, this was my opinion coming into the NFL. There was no way that he was going to turn into a consistent high volume player as a vertical outside X receiver with those separation concerns. Don't care how many jump balls you win. They've been trying to get Josh Allen to stop throwing into tight coverage and stop throwing jump balls. And you're like, let's get a guy who will only work if he's like a contested catch receiver. I just think the way they built that was pretty questionable to begin with.
Right. And again, like, you know, we don't know as much about football as all these people making these organizational decisions, sure, but there are also times when they do stuff like this, and you're like, that's not going to work.
Not all of them, Rich. Andy Reid, we could definitely say that, but there's some out there that, I mean,
that's fair.
Rich Rebar could probably do a better job.
Maybe. That is fair.
Okay, let's wrap this show up with a little deep sleeper conversation. Year three breakouts. These are all guys going outside the top 150 in ADP right now. And again, I'm going to throw these guys grab bag at you. We don't have to discuss all of them. Take which one you think is the most interesting. Jalen McMillan, ADP 153 overall. Ryan Flournoy, Dallas Cowboys, 82nd overall. Malik Washington, 180 overall, Miami Dolphins. AD Mitchell, 186. Troy Franklin, who was actually second in receiving yards among this group last year, 232 overall, and Devon Vaile, 240. And if you want to talk about Jalen Polk, Tyler Shuck's fishing buddy, let's not overlook the fishing narrative, okay? Tyler Shuck, Jalen Polk, fishing together, okay? That's important. If you want to throw him into the mix with Devon Vaile, you can do that as well. So deep sleepers there of this group. Anyone really stand out to you as a very appealing pick?
I think just for offensive attachment and what, you know, the offense could still look like if they do play a lot more 11 personnel, which they might not, is still Flonoy. Like, he's got the contingency value for either injury, right? Like, and we saw it, the small sample, like CeeDee Lamb, you know, missed week 5 against the Jets. He actually goes nuts, has the 6 for 114. He leaves week 14 against the Lions, that concussion. Flonoy goes nuts the rest of that game too. So you have the contingency upside. They also just could play, still more jailbreak. I think the defense is going to be better and the offensive line is going to be healthier this year too. So maybe that's what roadblocks it, but he still can just get on the field a lot more in an offense we believe in. So there's that. I'm interested in your take on the Jalen McMillan stuff, because just like, what position do these guys play? How does it roll out? Because I kind of tried to make like the case of like, hey, I think the Bucs in general, from a top-down stance, like Baker Mayfield in the passing game, they're going to be in like a lot of shootouts and a lot of passing game stuff. And like, just how does it shake out? Because you've heard like Ibuka playing Z, Godwin the slot. Does that mean Godwin's not going to play in 1-2 wide receiver stuff, given his age and maybe where he stands contractually with the organization? Does Ted Hurst play the X? Where do you see like the actual marriage of this like all shaking out with the Bucs guys?
First, before I answer that, I just want to note, like, yeah, I'm with you on Ryan Flournoy, who I think is really, really good and underrated and could be like a starting receiver. I think he's a very good player, and I'm with you on him as a good contingent value pick and somebody that's going to have some weeks every now and again as well. On the Bucs, I actually think Jalen McMillan played really well, in not really well, but like kind of in a better than I expected to end last year, and showed some real improvement in his ability to separate, which I thought was a nice development for him. And I actually think he showed enough separation ability against man coverage to play some boundary receiver stuff. I don't think this is one of those teams that's going to go into a lot of heavy personnel. I think they will be 11 personnel focused. Zach Robinson in 2024 as the Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator, I think Zach Robinson's actually a pretty good play designer. Play calling, sequencing and all that maybe could be better, but just the way that passing game was designed for the Falcons that year, everybody got work from the slot. Like, right, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Kyle Pitts, even Ray McCloud, like all those guys were above 30% slot rate that year because of how much motion they were doing at the snap, which I think kind of blurs the lines for some of the positional stuff with these players. So I would bet that early in the season, McMillan probably ends up taking the most outside on-ball snaps. Ibuka's in the Z role, and Chris Godwin's kind of that power slot. And Godwin and Ibuka will kind of alternate between who is the Z at the snap and who is the slot at the snap based on motion and everything. So, yeah, I think McMillan is just a classic, like, better in best ball type player. And my guess is he holds Ted Hurst off for most of the season because Hurst is just coming from Georgia State and a really talented player that could be their X long term. But, you know, Hugh Jackson's X receiver at Georgia State is a big leap now to being the Buccaneers starting X receiver in year one. Ted Hurst, that would be a big jump.
And I think Zach Robinson also has been, you know, sometimes we get these play callers that we're excited for, and sometimes circumstantially they're kind of forcing some situations that maybe they didn't want to do. I think I'm at least holding like out hope, like Nick Caley was like this way. Like, the reason they didn't do some of the stuff year one that we saw Sean McVay do was just product of offensive line and like health of the wide receiver room and then not being able to run the football. Like, they've tried to address those things. And I really think Zach Robinson wanted to do some of this stuff too, but year one had Kirk Cousins coming off the Achilles and he couldn't play under center. And then you go to Michael Penix, who just did that. That's, he can't do it. So like, I don't want to say like what we saw from Atlanta where they were just in shotgun at one of the least highest rates, like, is something that's going to carry over here. Like, you, it's probably going to be more 11 personnel base, but I feel like we can get more under center 11 personnel stuff than what we saw with Atlanta, just because of what they had to do with the quarterback room. So there's some guys that I think that have let us down from an offensive coordinator stance, but I'm still willing to kind of see what they bring to the table with new personnel and a new opportunity. And he is definitely one of them, because I think there's a chance that you have Baker doing a lot more things he was comfortable with 2 years ago versus what Josh Grizzard wanted to do downfield last year.
Malik Washington, AD Mitchell, I also think are kind of interesting as well. Like Malik Washington, I know we shared some affinity for him as a prospect. I don't know that he's going to be some fantasy home run necessarily, but I'm still interested in him as an NFL player. AD Mitchell is just like he's the X receiver for the Jets. I don't know what to do with that from a fantasy standpoint. And of course,
I think AD Mitchell's new. He's like new Darius Slayton, I think, for fantasy. Like
that's what you're hoping for.
We keep wanting to make him a thing. And to be fair, he's at least Darius Slayton that can get open. But like it feels like
I think he's been pretty significantly overrated as a separator. Like he's been solid against man coverage in the NFL. He's like the worst zone beater. He's one of the worst zone beaters in the league among like relevant. I mean, he's not even like a consistent like starter necessarily, I guess, to this point. But yeah, even as a prospect, you know, he's never been that guy. So I think some of like the separation stuff with AD Mitchell is even a little bit overrated. So I find myself being kind of like an AD Mitchell centrist, and there's not really like a centrist party in the AD Mitchell contingent anymore. So like there's just like you're either oh, this guy's way better than you think, he's actually awesome, look at all these routes, or you think he absolutely has never been able to play and was a terrible prospect. And I kind of find myself somewhere in the middle there, which I don't know that I'm that makes me interested in the Frank Reich X receiver at all in the year 2026. Right.
Yeah, and I thought you brought up Troy Franklin. I thought just that stretch of last year where you saw Franklin kind of overtake Cortland Sutton in terms of like what they were trying to do in the offense to just make you extra bullish on Jalen Waddle, because they saw that like kind of transition and they were like, he's good, but not good enough to where we want like the player in this capacity to do. So let's just get a real guy that could do all this stuff. And that's what they did.
Well, I don't know there's going to be anybody more bullish on Jalen Waddle than me from a fantasy ranking standpoint. I'm very, very high on Jalen Waddle this year. He's going to be awesome. So I'm with you on that. There's the proof of concept. Like, we need this guy, but let's just get the real version of this, which I think kind of sums up our thoughts on Jalen Waddle. Troy Franklin. So, Rich, this is a monster episode. I knew it was going to be a monster episode. In closing, though, are you still optimistic about this 2024 class, or do you think it goes down as a minor or major disappointment? Ooh.
No, I'm still year three. I'm not ready to close the book on a lot of those guys that we talked about. I think there's still a lot of talent in these players. I think the NFL works in mysterious ways sometimes, man. Sometimes you can't always get on the path that leads to success. And I think that's happened to a couple of these guys. But granted, also, too, I think some of these guys still have those opportunities. So we hope, like, you know, Ladd and, you know, Ricky Pearsall, like those opportunities. Rome Odunze, obviously, like these things are still in front of them for a 2026 period. From a dynasty period, though, like I would say Marv's more of a dynasty belief for me. I just, like I said, no Cardinals. You brought up Malik Washington. If I have a no Cardinals policy, I'm telling you what, I got a Miami Dolphins policy, man. Like I ain't drafting any of these guys. Maybe Malik Willis, because it's for the brand, the throwback for the brand.
Yeah, of course.
That's really it. So no, I choose to live my life with a glass half full approach. So I think we'll at least, you know, keep the candle lit.
Yeah, weirdly, this wasn't supposed to be, again, as we did last year, a contrarian corner episode, but I kind of felt like a little bit of a contrarian to myself throughout this episode, is that I tried to be like harsh and maybe paint the downside scenarios for some of these guys this year, because ultimately, to answer my own question, I'm with you that I'm still pretty optimistic about this class. And I actually think a lot of these guys, year three, will end up being like target players for me, whether it's a Odunze or McConkey, depending on ADP, you know, dynasty and everything like that. It's a separate discussion. So yeah, I actually do really find myself still optimistic for the most part. Like there's none of the guys outside of, again, like, yeah, Jalen Polk I liked as a prospect, and that was a big miss, even though I kind of think the Patriots screwed him, but that's a separate conversation. There's no guy that I really liked as a prospect and I was like kind of bullish here on that I'm willing to sell just yet. Maybe after this year I'm proven wrong, but for the most part, I still remain pretty optimistic about a lot of these guys from the 2024 NFL draft class. Rich, I'm always optimistic whenever. Yeah, exactly. They're last year they were getting steamed up. This year there's some value to getting these guys this year. Rich, I always appreciate when you jump on the show. I know you just recently did an episode with Justin Boone as well, so I appreciate you double dipping here in the last month or so. Boone June, though, that's a different, that's like a different pod. Okay, the Boone pod is different.
Well, you guys weren't together. Pod, so. I felt robbed that I didn't get to do a show with Harmon, you know, with you. So it's like, how do I? I got to come back and get the solo show.
No, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you doing this. Everybody, make sure you check out Rich's work. What are you working on right now that the people can check out?
Ironically, I mean, this is the big tiers week. This is where it's like draft kit season. So I'm actually working on my wide receiver tiers right now and under the hood. So timely for that. But those will be out last of the positions this week. But it's all tiers week. And if anyone's not familiar with my tiers, they're like meant to be treated like an almanac where you come back all season. I add to them. They're like you know, a big like smorgasbord of information. I promise you, even if you've read 100 articles on the same player, I'll have one thing in there that you'll be like, I didn't know that about that guy. And then if you like the condensed stuff, because everyone says like, you know, long form is dead. Pianowski, your partner, he would tell me like less words is more. But I also do condensed version of these too. So like the tiers are where I use my long form thing. And I have like a short and condensed ranks where it's just a bullet point on each player. And if you just want linear rankings, I got those too. So...
He's got it all. And don't worry, Rich, actually, last year led the campaign on the show that we were reading again in 2025. And after much deliberation, we are reading again in 2026 as well. So reading is still happening. Awesome. So all of our listeners and viewers are going to go read all of your work and make sure they check out those tiers. Because, yeah, Rich does a really good job with putting those together. As for this show, that's all for now. However, next week, next Wednesday, we're going to be back, and it's our last week with just one pod a week before we really begin to ramp up to training camp and draft season. Justin Boone joins me to identify the players we want to draft from bad teams. Oh, man, what a treat. We're going to be talking Cardinals once again. That's going to be live next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.